Osho, Returning to the Source, Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 3.
Bhagwan, Nansen, the famous Chinese Zen master, was in the woods one day near the temple, cutting down trees with a huge axe. A monk who had come from a distance to pay homage to the master passed through the woods and came close to the woodcutter. "Is the abbot of Nansen at home?" he asked the woodcutter. The woodcutter replied to the monk, "I bought this axe for 2 pieces of copper." And lifting the axe above the astonished monk's head, he added, "It is very sharp." The monk fled in dismay, to discover later that the woodcutter was Nansen himself.
The first thing to be understood, and understood as deeply as possible, is that Zen is nothing special. It is nothing extraordinary. The people who are in search of religion are always, almost always, very egoistic. Their very search starts because their ego is not satisfied with this world. They would like something to be more precious, to be more of the divine, something extraordinary. And this is the problem. Egoists are attracted towards religion more easily, and this is the problem, because religion says if the ego is there, there can be no growth. And egoists are easily attracted towards religion. And the religion starts only when you drop the ego. But this world is temporary. Nothing is permanent here. And the ego would like something permanent, eternal. Everything in this world is made of the same stuff as dreams, and the ego is not content. The ego would like something like a solid rock. So the ego condemns this world, and it starts a journey towards the eternal. But the eternal has its own conditions. And this is the first condition, that if you don't drop the ego, you cannot enter the gate. The religion basically is the understanding that all the trips of the ego are materialistic. Even the trip towards God is materialistic. It is not the question what you seek. It is the question who is the seeker. If the ego is the seeker, then whatsoever you seek is material, is of this world. You may call it God. You may call it moksha. You may call it anything you like. The truth, the absolute, the Brahma, It doesn't matter. If the ego is the seeker, then whatsoever you seek is of this world. When the ego is not the seeker, then everything I say, remember, is of that world. Even if you chop wood, even if you are a small shopkeeper, a clerk, a sweeper, nobody in particular, just ordinary, nobody knows about you. Nobody ever thinks that you are a chosen one. Nobody will ever hear about you. That doesn't matter. If the ego has dropped within, whatsoever you do is divine. Otherwise, the ego poisons everything, and whatsoever you do is of the devil and not of the divine. Zen is just being ordinary, and Zen is the essence of all religion. Just to be ordinary. Realizing the fact that the ego creates a hell around it, that ego is the source of all hell, that it has all the seeds of misery, anguish, one simply drops it without a second thought. One simply realizes the fact that I am suffering because of my ego, one simply drops it. Not in search of something. You can drop the ego in search of something, then you have not really dropped it. You are bargaining. Realizing the fact that ego is ugly, the source of all misery, illness, you simply drop it. You don't ask what I will gain out of it if I drop my ego. Because all gain is the subtle search of the ego. You simply drop it because it is useless, harmful, poisonous. You are passing through the woods. You come across a snake. You simply jump out of the way. You don't ask what I will gain out of it. And I will not jump out of the way unless I am certain what I am going to gain out of it. You simply jump without a second thought. Because if you have a second thought about it, by the time the snake may have attacked you. You simply jump, realizing the fact that the snake is there, death is there, you simply jump out of it. The house is on fire. You don't ask what I will gain if I run out of it. You simply run out of it without a second thought. You think about it when you are out of it. In fact, you run without thinking. When you are out of the danger, then you sit under a tree, then you have a look. Then you think all over the thing, what happened? Why you ran away? You realized it. And the very realization becomes a change, a transformation, a revolution. If you realize that the ego is your house on fire, you drop it. You transfer what I will gain out of it. You simply become a nobody, an ordinary being. And once you are ordinary, everything starts happening. Zen is ordinary. It makes people just nobodies. And this is the beauty of it. When you become a nobody, when you are ordinary, this is the most extraordinary phenomena possible. Listen, everybody wants to be extraordinary. So the longing to be extraordinary is very ordinary, because everybody wants it. And to become ordinary is absolutely extraordinary, because nobody wants it. Nobody longs for it. Remember this, only then you can understand Zen masters. Because of this, the seed of silence, the seed of inner emptiness that Buddha gave to Mahakashyap, it had to be taken to China. Because in India, a very great accident has happened in the past. And that accident was the Brahmins. You cannot find more egoistic people than Brahmins. They created a whole hierarchy in India. They were the most extraordinary, the chosen few, the head people. They even divided the class just like the body. They said those who are ordinary, workers who work with their hands, they are just like the feet, the lowest. Those who are business people, they are just like the belly. They help the body. They are the center of the body, the physical, just like the belly. Then the warriors, the soldiers, the kshatriyas, they are just like the arms to defend, to protect. And Brahmins, they are like the head, the thinkers, the philosophers. And the head is the highest. And the whole body exists for the head. And the head doesn't exist for anybody. It exists for itself. The head is to order, discipline. And the whole body has to follow the head. And if a leg says no, it has to be cut and thrown away. These Brahmins were the most egoistic. And it was not coincidence that Adolf Hitler had chosen the name that Brahmins had given to Hindus, the Aryans. Adolf Hitler had chosen the name for his own people, the Aryans. The Aryans means the noblest, the best. So Brahmins are the source of all fascism in the world. Adolf Hitler is just a byproduct, an offshoot. Adolf Hitler's master, Friedrich Nietzsche, praised Brahmins like anything. And the greatest Brahmin and the most mad, of course, completely neurotic, was Manu. He has given the code and the hierarchy and the division of the societies to the Hindus. Friedrich Nietzsche praised Manu, and he said Manu is the greatest thinker ever born in the world, and he is one of the most mad. he was the source of all fascism. So it was very difficult for Buddha to teach people not to be anything. It was almost impossible. Buddha was surrounded by Brahmins. And the idea of being special is so ordinary that it is in everybody's blood. And the Brahmins were very, very mad about their egos. They couldn't think of being ordinary. You cannot imagine that a Brahmin will be ready to do something manual. It is dirty. And the people who do it are dirty, they are untouchable. Sudras, they cannot be touched. Not only those people cannot be touched, even their shadow is untouchable. Even now, in this 20th century, there are villages in India, whenever a sweeper or a shoemaker passes by the street, he has to declare loudly that I am a Sudra and untouchable, I am passing from this street. So that if some Brahmin is ready to go out of his house or something, he can stop. Because an untouchable is passing through the street, the whole street is dirty at this moment. And if an untouchable passes and his shadow falls on you, it is a crime on a Brahmin. He can be punished for it. Punished, sentenced to death even. They have killed many people in the past. Just the crime was that a Brahmin was sitting and the untouchable passed and his shadow, not he, just his shadow touched, passed over. It was almost impossible for Buddha to make people realize the beauty of being ordinary. He was born amidst people who were absolutely egoists. That's why Buddhism couldn't survive in India. It was because of Buddha's influence, his personality, his force, his being, that it survived a little. But the moment Buddha disappeared, soon everything disappeared. Hence Bodhidharma had to go to China. But why to China? He could have gone to Burma, he could have gone to Ceylon, he could have gone to Afghanistan, he could have gone to anywhere in the world. Why China particularly? There was a particular reason. China had the right soil at that moment. Lao Tsen Chuang Tzu has made the soil there. They have made a particular atmosphere, a milieu, because they lived like ordinary people. If you come across Chuang Tzu, you will not be able to recognize unless you have a very deep understanding, unless you have passed through a satori, a glimpse of the eternal. Only then you will be able to realize that a Chuang Tzu or a Lao Tse is there, otherwise not, because they don't have any outward soul. You can recognize a Pope. He has an outward paraphernalia all around him. Nothing inside. Everything outward. If a Pope comes into an ordinary dress, nobody will be able to recognize. If a Chuang Tzu comes, few people will be able to recognize who have a certain depth of understanding. But Chantazu lives just like an ordinary man, fishing, cutting wood, doing this and that. Whatsoever the life needs, he will do it. He is nobody special. Buddha's teaching flowered in China. It came to perfection. Nansen is the meeting of Buddha and Lao Tzu. The meeting of Buddha and Tao. And Zen is meeting of all that is beautiful in Buddha and all that is beautiful in Lao Tzu. That's why there is nothing like Zen. Because two extremes, tremendously powerful, tremendously beautiful, utterly of the unknown, came to a meeting. There has never been such a meeting. Other religions have met, but they have met as enemies. They have conflicted, clashed with each other. Something has happened even out of that clash, but it cannot be so beautiful. It has not been a natural growth. For example, in India it happened. Hindus and Mohammedans met. They clashed. The offshoot is Sufism. Sufis were born. Very beautiful people. But it seems as if a child is born out of a rape, not out of love. Even a beautiful child is possible out of a rape, but not out of love. This meeting of Buddha's teaching with Tao is out of love. They simply fell in love. There has been no clash. As if they suited to each other perfectly, something was lacking in Taoism and something was lacking in Buddhism. Simply they complemented each other. They became a new being. The two disappeared and something new is born. This new is this man Nansen. Now try to understand this parable. Nansen, the famous Chinese Zen master, was in the woods one day near the temple cutting down trees with a huge axe. You cannot believe. You cannot conceive. Even Buddha you cannot conceive chopping wood or cutting down a tree. He sits under a tree, right, never cuts it. You cannot imagine Buddha doing anything. You have seen his images. He has millions of images in the world, but always sitting silently with closed eyes. Images of inactivity. Images of meditation, but not images of meditation in action, no. And you cannot find an image of any Zen master just sitting with closed eyes. He is always doing something. That was the missing thing in Buddhism, which was supplied by Tao. Life should be a balance between inactivity and activity. If you are completely active, you miss something, you miss the inner. If you are completely inactive, you again miss something, the outer. And outer has its own beauty. Nothing is wrong in it. In the West, they tried to be active, more and more active. Activity became the whole pattern of their life. They did many things, miracles. But the inner core was completely lost, forgotten. In the East, they have done inactivity too much. then look outside, everything has gone ugly. To look, to open eyes in India is really to pass through a very painful experience. So I know why Buddha closed his eyes. Why you always find him with closed eyes sitting under a tree, afraid to open the eyes, all over poverty, misery. But it is a vicious circle. If you close the eyes, the misery is not going to change just by closing your eyes. Something has to be done about it. The East has become inward and has lost all contact from the outward existence. This is an imbalance. Zen is a perfect balance. A Zen master meditates, but then he goes to the woods to cut wood also, because winter is approaching. He does many things, just like an ordinary man. He is nothing special. Nansen is one of the very few rare human beings who attain to the highest, like a Buddha, Muhammad, Jesus, and cutting wood. Somebody asked, and Nansen was very old, and how are you? He said, perfect. Cutting wood, carrying water to the ashram, preparing food, working in the garden. It is so beautiful. Look, cutting wood, he remains himself. Activity is there, but the mind is absolutely silent, carrying water to the ashram. He carries water, but there is nobody inside. If you can act without somebody there inside, you will enter the realm of tremendous beauty. Because activity releases the energy, and the silence enjoys the release. Activity, you spread out. You become a vast sky. And deep inside, nobody, a silence. The silence spreads with your activity. Nansen carrying water to the ashram is silence carrying water to the ashram. Nansen's cutting wood is silence cutting wood. You cannot imagine what bliss is possible if you can act without the actor being inside, without the ego. If you can simply act and move from act to act, without accumulating any identification that this is me doing it, this is I have done this, I have done that. Without accumulating any I through the activities, if you can move from one activity to another activity as a silence, as an emptiness, unimaginable benediction, unimaginable blessings shower upon you. You feel the whole existence shares its secrets with you. Because through activity you are connected with it, and through silence you are capable to see, to look, to enjoy, to touch. Through silence you are sensitive, and through activity you are in contact. Sensitivity inside and contact outside. this is the balance, then you have two wings. Otherwise, you will be flying with one wing, either activity or silence, but one wing is not enough. You may flutter a little here and there, but one wing cannot lead you to the heights. You cannot move into the sky. You cannot go far away. Two wings are needed, and the balance, activity in activity, the balance. Knife and cutting wood, remember it. And whenever your mind moves to the extreme, just pull it back to the middle. Either the mind wants to be active or it wants to be inactive. Because with the extreme, the mind can exist. In the middle, exactly in the middle, when inactivity and activity cancel each other, negate each other, mind disappears. Nansen was cutting wood near his temple. A monk who had come from a great distance to pay homage to the master passed through the woods and came close to the woodcutter. Is the abbot of Nansen. His ashram, his monastery was also called Nansen Monastery. Really, Nansen is not his name. It was basically the name of the monastery. And nobody knows this Nansen's name. So, by and by, he was called Nansen. The abbot of Nansen, he was just the abbot of Nansen, then by and by, he became Nansen. Nobody knows his name. And this is good, because nobody has a name. All names are false, so any will do. All names are meaningless, because you come into the world without a name. And when you leave the world, you go without a name. The name is just a tag attached to you for utilitarian purposes. Without a name, it will be difficult. Difficult for others. But you are without a name. Nansen has no name. He is known by the name of the temple, the monastery. So the disciple asks, is the abbot of Nansen at home? He asked the woodcutter. If he was really a disciple, he would have recognized this man. There was no need. Because a man who is enlightened is a light into darkness. Can't you recognize light into darkness? If you can't recognize light into darkness, you are blind. The very thing that he asked this woodcutter, is the master at home, is foolish. It is okay for a visitor, but not good for a disciple. And he had come from a long distance to pay his homage. He may have known Nansen before. He may have seen him before. He is a disciple. He must have seen. But he couldn't think Nansen's cutting wood. He must have seen him with closed eyes sitting under a tree. He must have seen in silence, or must have seen preaching, must have seen worshipping in the temple. He cannot imagine that Nansen will be cutting wood. Because he cannot imagine, he cannot recognize. Otherwise, you will recognize an enlightened man. Wherever he is, he may be in a beggar. You will recognize him if you have the eyes, if you have the vision, if you have even a single glimpse of what a realized man is. You will recognize him anywhere. He cannot hide. How can you hide a light? It cannot be hidden. It is such a tremendous phenomenon. You cannot hide it. In thousand ways it is coming out. The whole forest was filled that day with Nansen. And this disciple could not recognize. Disciples also recognize through the outside. Will you be able to recognize me if I am cutting wood somewhere? Difficult. Will you be able to recognize me if I am a beggar and come and knock at your door? Impossible. Because you have not attained to your inner realization, how can you recognize me? You can recognize only to that extent which is your span of inner realization. You can see only up to that extent in a master, the same extent as you can see within yourself. Because the master is nothing but your within, standing without. A master is nothing but your future, standing in the present. A master is nothing but your fulfilled form. What you will be when you are fulfilled? That's what master is right now. So if you have no inner vision, you will miss. If you recognize only through outward forms, then you will be able to recognize Nansen in the temple. Not because of Nansen, but because of the temple. You will recognize him while he is sitting in meditation, not because of meditation, but because of the posture. But have you ever heard an enlightened man cutting wood? You will miss. It happened, an enlightened man was here just few years before in India, Sai Baba. He lived just near Pune. He had a great disciple. He was himself a Mohammedan. The disciple was a Hindu. The disciple used to come every day to Sai Baba. And when Sai Baba will take his food, only then he will go and take his own food. When the master has not eaten, how he can eat? And you cannot find a more irregular man than Sai Baba. Sometime in the morning, just the first thing he will do, he will eat food. And something late in the night, someday. The whole day he will not eat. And this Hindu disciple has to wait. Sometimes far in the night, the master will eat, then he will go and prepare his food because he was a Brahmin. He will not allow anybody else to touch his food. And then he will eat. One day Sai Baba said to him, Narayan Swami was his name, you need not bother about this. If you are a real disciple, you need not come. I will come. Whenever your food is ready, I will come and give you my darshan. There at your hut. You need not bother because 5 miles you have to come and then you have to go. Now, I will do this. Narayan was very happy because master cared so much for him. He went dancing back. The moment he was stepping down from the mosque where Sai Baba lived, Sai Baba said, but remember to recognize. Narayan said, of course, what a thing to say. How I can miss. Then the next day, in the morning, Narayan was very happy. He took his bath, did his worship, prepared food, and the master was to come. And the master came. But Narayan chased him out of the house. Because it was no master, it was a dog. And then he was very much worried. And nobody came. The whole day he waited and waited. Except that dog, nobody came. So he ran to the mass and said, Sai Baba, have you forgotten? I have been waiting and waiting. Sai Baba laughed and he said, no, I have not forgotten. I cannot forget anything. I came, but you chased me out. And then Narayan became aware. He said, but it was a dog. Sai Baba said, if you recognized me, you would have recognized even in a dog. Because what difference does it make if you recognize light? You will recognize it in any form. The shape of the lamp is irrelevant. Or is it relevant? The shape of the lamp. It is irrelevant because light is light, whatsoever the shape of the lamp. But you recognize the shape of the lamp, not the light. This disciple asked Nansen himself, is the abbot of Nansen at home? And what a question to ask, because the master is always at home. Wherever he is. A master is always at home. That is the quality of being a master, that he is always at home. What a question to ask. You are never at home, that's right. Even in your home, you are never at home, because at-homeness is an inner quality. Even in your home, you feel a stranger. Even in your home, you feel something is missing. You are missing. You can change the home, you can have a better home, but the missing will continue. In a better home also you will miss something. You go on piling new furniture, new paintings, decorations, but again and again you find something is missing. You are missing, you are not at home, and the furniture cannot do. Nothing can be of any help unless you come at home. Coming at home is the whole point. Returning to the source is coming at home. A master is always at home. This disciple asked, is the master at home? The woodcutter replied to the monk, I bought this axe for 2 pieces of copper. He raised his axe and said, I bought this axe for 2 pieces of copper. What he is doing, this man Nansen? Is he mad? But he is showing the quality of being at home. This is the quality of being at home, to be in the present. He is bringing this man to the moment. And at this moment, the master happens to cut wood. At this moment, the master is a woodcutter. At this moment, the axe is the only reality. At this moment, the master is in the axe, in the activity. The axe falls on the tree. The wood is being chopped or cut. The master is at home. He is in the X right now, in the activity. That's why he raises the X. If the disciple had even a little understanding, he would have found it. What master is trying to sow. Because there are things which cannot be said and only sowed. And the master is telling him, come nearer, come closer, I am here. Look at this X. Don't allow your mind to wander. Don't go anywhere. This moment is enough, I am here. Right now, this very moment, look at this X and come closer, nearer to the present. So he says, I bought this X for 2 pieces of copper. And only a Zen master can be so absurd. What an answer. He is asking something else, he is answering something else. That's why Arthur Koestler goes back and says to the West that these Zen people are completely crazy, mad. Don't fall in their trap. They are. For an Aristotelian mind, they are. For a logical mind, they are. You ask about A and they talk about B. But what they say is not the thing. They are saying something, not saying something. Don't listen what they say. Just look what they are doing. What this nonsense is doing to this disciple. He is giving a shock. He has asked a question. He is not answering that question. Because if that question is answered, the mind continues. If the question is answered in a logical way, relevant to the question, the mind continues. The master is completely cutting. He is not only cutting the tree by the axe, he is trying to cut the mind with that axe also. Bringing the axe, he is giving a shock. For a moment, the disciple will be at a loss what to do. To whom have I asked? At least for a single moment, there will be no thought. In that moment, the recognition is possible. But you can miss. Because the recognition cannot be forced upon you. You have to take it. Or leave it. It is up to you. A master can only create a situation. It is up to you whether you grow through that situation or not. You may not take it. You may try to escape. This is what the disciple did. I bought this axe for 2 pieces of copper. He is bringing him from his mind to the reality. Zen is absolutely earthbound. Buddha is like a sky. And Laos is like the earth. And where earth and sky meet, there is Zen. This nonsense is the meeting of the earth and the sky. Buddha is like wings. And Laos is like roots. And this nonsense is like a tree with roots and wings both. Where reality, the earth, the solid earth, meets the inner sky. That can be recognized only if you use the situation. I go on creating thousands of situations for you. And you go on missing. But remember, you are not going to win. You can miss 1,000 times. I will create 1,001 time. You can escape this way and that, but you cannot escape. Once a man is in the trap of enlightened man, futile all your efforts. Because you cannot adjust him. And you cannot adjust his patience. I have bought this axe for 2 pieces of copper. Infinite opportunity is given in that moment. Announcing with a raised axe, talking nonsense to this man to bring him to his senses, and lifting the axe above the man's head, he added, but seeing that he has missed, this won't do. This disciple is a little thick. I know those thick disciples. Then he added, raised his axe on his head and added, it is very sharp. The monk fled in dismay to discover later that the woodcutter was nonsense himself. The second opportunity that the axe is on your head, it can fall any moment, and this man looks mad. You could have recognized the moment. You could have become aware of the situation, because in a danger, even a stupid person becomes aware. In danger, the axe hanging on you in a madman's hand, and he says, this is very sharp. But the disciple did what you have been doing. He escaped in dismay. That was the moment to be there. That was the moment to be there completely. If he had remained for a single moment there without escaping, then the mind would have disappeared. Because there is nothing to do for the mind in such a moment. What can you do? It was a death situation. Any moment the disciple can die. If he remains there, just a single moment, does not escape, the mind will disappear. Nothing to do. Facing death, mind disappears. This situation comes to everybody who enters in deep meditation. A moment comes when the axe comes just on your head and it is always sharp. A moment comes when you go deeper, you face death. That is the boundary of the ego and your inner being, where you face death inside. Because when you go deeper, a moment comes when the boundary of the ego has to be crossed. You go beyond it. And you are so much identified with the ego that you feel it like death. My own disciples come to me and they say, no, it is difficult. We have come to a terrain inside where it feels like death, and we have come to know life, not to die. And we have come to be more alive, not to be dead. And we have come in search of life abundant, not to disappear. But you have to disappear only then life in abundance happens to you. A moment comes inside when really a meditation is growing, you will feel like dying. Don't escape in dismay. There my axe is on your head and it is very sharp. If you escape from there, the mind functions again. The mind starts thinking 1,000 things. And once you escape, then the mind won't allow you to go to that point again. Because always you will start an inner trembling. Whenever the point will be near, you will become suspicious whether to take a step more or not, or to escape. and only later on you will recognize that at that moment when you were dying, the Master was there. He was Nansen himself. Only later on. But then you will repent. Because later on many people recognize. The mind has a tremendous capacity to understand things when they are not. When you have missed, then the mind goes on repenting about it, thinking what should have been. The mind has a tremendous capacity to think about the past, to think about the future. It has no capacity to be here and now. And that was the moment, X on your head. It is very sharp. The monk fled in dismay to discover later that the woodcutter was Nansen himself. But he has missed a great opportunity. You can also miss, that is more possible. And later on you think. But what can you do about the past? You cannot undo it. You cannot go back. And even if you go back, remember, the same situation will not be given to you again. If this man comes again, he will not find Nansen cutting wood. Even if he finds Nansen cutting wood, Nansen is not going to talk about the axe that he has purchased it into copper. Because a master never repeats the situation because it is useless. And a repeated situation will not help because the mind knows about it and it will not be a shock. And the mind can think about it. Think, the disciple comes again, realizing that he was Nansen himself, goes to the tree because he knows where he will be cutting wood and waiting for him. And Nansen is cutting wood. And he asks, is the master at home? No, the whole thing is absolutely foolish because it is a repetition. And he knows that this is Nansen. And he asks, is the abbot of Nansen is at home? And the master says, this axe I have purchased in 2 coppers. And now the disciple knows, now the second thing will be, he will raise the axe on my head and he will say, it is sharp and I am not to escape this time. I will stand there and let us see what happens. Nothing will happen. Because the whole point is lost. A mind, when it knows what is going to happen, continues. That's why every master has to go on inventing different situations. Once a situation has been known, the mind becomes the master of it. The mind is the master of the known. Only the unknown can destroy it. Known, never. The known can always be manipulated. A situation cannot be repeated. That's why in the ancient days, masters insisted that whatsoever is being done should not be written. Because if it is written, that situation forever closes, for future disciples also, for future masters also. Because it is written and people will read it and they will know it, what to do. And if you know what to do, if you are already prepared, it is useless. You have to be caught in a moment when you are not prepared. Unprepared, you have to be caught. In that unprepared moment, the mind is not there because all preparations are in the mind. So whenever I ask a person to take a jump into sannyas and he says, I will think, he has missed that opportunity. He will take the sannyas, but I will have to find something else for him. If I said, take the sannyas, and he says without a single thought, yes. Not even asking what sannyas is. Not even asking, where are you leading me? Not even asking what clothes can do, what a new name will do. Not asking anything. If I say, take a sannyas, and he says, okay. Unprepared, if he takes the jump, he has used an opportunity, a door was open at that moment. He says, I will think about it and I will come later on. He will think. He may come or he may not come, it doesn't matter, that opportunity is lost. He may come prepared. After a few days he will come and he say, now I thought over it, I am convinced of the utility of it. It is not a utilitarian thing. It has no utility, nothing. I have thought about it and I have talked to many sannyasins and they say it helps. So I am ready. Now give me sannyas. I will give him also, but this opportunity is the last. I will have to find some other. Your mind is your preparedness. What nonsense is doing? He is bringing this man to a moment of unpreparedness and he escaped. He missed, realized later on, but then nothing can be done. Remember this. While you are with me, remember this. Because only through situations you will grow, not through teachings. Whatsoever I say will not be of much help. Whatsoever I create around you will be the real thing. Saying simply helps you to hang around me, that's all. I go on talking to you, that is just giving sweets to children, so they hang around. And suddenly in an unprepared moment I will take the axe and I will say to you, it is very sharp, don't escape in that moment. Later on you may recognize, but I may not be here. Later on you may recognize and come back, but the same situation cannot be repeated. And if you become habitual escapist, you may be ready for the old situation, but for the new situation you will escape again. And if it happens many times, you become addicted to escape. Then you don't know. Whenever you feel unprepared, you simply find yourself running away. Whenever you are prepared, you feel at ease, secure. But you are not here in search of security. And I am not here to give you security. I am here to take all securities from you. All the earth beneath your feet, I have to take it away. I have to throw you into the abyss. Only falling in that abyss, your ego will disappear. And for the first time, through insecurity, you will attain to the eternal security. But through insecurity goes the path. Through death goes the path towards life. Dying, you will achieve. Clinging to life, you will miss. What this story says, it says Nansen created a death situation. whenever there is a death situation, you escape. You say it is insecure. Mind is always afraid of dying. It clings. It clings to anything. In India, they say that a dying man clings even to a straw. He knows well it cannot save. He knows well a straw cannot become a boat. There is no safety in it, but just clinging. Maybe some miracle may happen and I may be saved. When you cling to the money, you are clinging to the istra. When you cling to power and prestige, you are clinging to the istra. When you cling to name, family, bank balance, you are clinging to istra, because nothing can save you. Death is coming. Death is rushing towards you. Whatsoever you do is useless. It will not save you. And what a master does, he says, before death overtakes you, you overtake death. Why wait for it? Waiting, you will be a victim. Going through it, you become a conqueror. Because one who is ready to die suddenly realizes that that is impossible. One who is ready to die suddenly realizes the mind will die, the body will die, the ego will die, but the being has been before the mind came in. The being has been before the body came in. The being has been before your birth. And the being will be after your death. When in meditation the axe is raised over your head and you feel a death moment, don't escape. Let the axe fall on you. It is sharp. It is good. It is good that it is sharp. Let your head be chopped completely. Once you are headless, and that is the meaning of being nobody. Because the ego exists in the head, the mind exists in the head, the Brahman, the ego, exists in the head. And you go on condemning everybody. You have to. A head-oriented person has to condemn everybody, because that is how he feels special. I have heard it happened in a small village. The community decided to change the old priest. They fired him and they brought a new priest. The first day, the priest gave his first sermon. The whole community has gathered. There was one guest also from another village. He asked the chief after the sermon was over that why you changed the old priest? What was the need? So the chief of the community said the old priest was talking every day. The same thing he will say, that you mend your ways, otherwise you will go to hell. The visitor was amazed. He said, what are you saying? But the same has been the sermon this morning. This man was also saying that you will go to hell if you don't mend your ways. The chief said, yes, he was saying, but the old always acted as if he was glad that we all will go to the hell. That is the difference. And and that was too heavy. The Brahmins are always glad that you will be in hell and they will be in heaven. And the priests are always glad that you will be in the fire of the hells. I have heard one preacher was talking to his congregation, and he was saying that you don't know what is going to happen in hell. Fire will be there, cold, freezing. Days will be there. Your body will shake and your teeth will clatter. One man raised a hand and he said, but I have got no teeth. So he said, you don't worry, false teeth will be provided. They are making every arrangement for you in the hell. The ego, the Brahmin, the head is always condemning everybody. Everybody is ordinary, only you are extraordinary. Only you are going to be saved. Nobody else. That's what Christians go on preaching, come and follow Jesus. Only those who follow Jesus will be saved. Everybody else is lost. That's what Mormons go on saying, Hindus go on saying. There seems to be a very deep politics in existence. If you follow somebody and if you go to this church, you will be saved. If you follow somebody else and go to another church, you will be destroyed. And same is the claim of the other church also. And God must be in a puzzle what to do. This whole condemnation comes from the head, the ego. A very subtle ego. Colors whatsoever you say and believe, your convictions, your philosophy, everything is colored by the ego. And sin is a simple life. And that is my teaching also. Be simple and nobody. Don't condemn anybody. Don't put yourself in a situation where you can feel holier than thou. Never. Just be ordinary. And when you are ordinary, all anxiety disappears. When you are ordinary, then your whole perception is totally different than the world singing in the trees. Is the message of the divine, then the breeze passing through the trees, and the leaf dancing in the breeze is his hand, his indication. Then the sky and the earth, everything is beautiful, and everything comes from him. When you are ordinary, when you are nobody, all the doors are open. When you are somebody, all the doors are closed. Be ordinary and live life silently. Don't be a politician. That is the only misfortune that can happen to a man. And politics are and religion are opposite poles. Politics is the effort to be somebody in the hierarchy, somewhere at the top. And religion is the search to stand just at the very end of the queue, just to be nobody. Says Lao Tse, nobody can insult me. Nobody can bring me down because I'm already there. Nobody can defeat me. Not that I am very strong, but I am already defeated. Nobody can defeat me. the ordinary person is the most beautiful phenomenon in the world. Just living moment to moment, not expecting, not asking. Whatsoever comes, accepting. Whatsoever comes, not only accepting, but accepting with a deep thankfulness, gratitude. When you are ordinary, whatsoever comes is more than you ever expected. When you are extraordinary, you think extraordinary, something very great, a Napoleon, a Hitler, then everything is always something unfulfilling. Everything is lower than your expectations. You are such a great man. Whatsoever happens is always below you. When you are ordinary, everything is more than you ever expected. And when this feeling comes, that it is more than you ever expected, you feel a gratitude. That gratitude is the inner shrine. In that gratitude, the first time the light from the behind descends. Create this shrine of gratitude inside, and soon you will find a light has come into it. The shrine is not dark, and this light doesn't belong to this world. It comes from the eternal. Enough for today.